Welcome to another Carlin Live Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, Sean, I picked up a really interesting book.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes at the 1902 Fifth Test.
Now, I'm not much of a reader, but Sherlock Holmes I've certainly know about and I've seen a few movies, but is this – I've never heard about Sherlock's home at the cricket.
No, but did you know, this is written by Stanley Shaw, and it came out about 1985-86, but the original inventor of Sherlock Holmes was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who also did Jurassic Park. He actually never talked about cricket in any of his Sherlock Holmes books, but he was a cricketer of note.
Right, and so Stanley Shaw... Is there some type of link there with the original author of Sherlock Holmes?
Well, there is and there isn't. His grandfather actually went to England to study agriculture back about that period, 1902, and he was a real cricket fanatic, and he loved Sherlock Holmes stories, which were obviously the popular thing at that particular time. So he sort of like devised his book around the fact that Sherlock Holmes was a cricketer, but he never really talked about cricket in his book. So he wanted to do a right an injustice.
And he has.
Yes.
And now, again, I know you're the sports historian, but the 1902 test, England versus Australia, was a pretty famous test, wasn't it?
Well, the series, Australia won the series. The first two games were kind of washed out and they were drawn. Australia won the next two, one of them by 3 runs, which was the fourth test, which was just incredible and gave them the series. So the fifth test, the one that this book is based on, is true to the facts, and England got up and they won with 1 wicket in hand. So it was probably one of the closest test finishes ever. But the interesting thing is, to cut it short, the person of the perspective of the story is a John Fairhurst, who comes from Australia. He wanted to see the last day of the test game while he was in England, wanted to catch it. Big cricket fan, plays cricket for country cricket in Australia. So that's one of the reasons he came there to England a little bit earlier to try to get the end of the test series. And then what happens is, as the story goes, he's not looking where he's going. He's walking across and a horse and cart knocked him over. He got all these things stolen by someone. The passenger in the cab happened to be Sherlock Holmes.
Of course.
Yeah, so he took him back to his place, and so we get started. But what happened then was one of the players for England, Wilfred Rhodes, a bowler and the number 11 batsman, he went missing on the morning of the last day of the fifth test. And the hierarchy came to see Sherlock Holmes to try to sort of help solve the problem because they knew they needed him to bat. To cut a long story short, Rhodes, believe it or not, broke his jaw yawning in the middle of the night, went to the doctors. The doctor he went to was a bit of a druggie.
Bit of a quack.
Yeah. And he overdosed this guy. He thought he killed him, tried to blackmail another doctor, an Indian doctor.
Intrigue.
And then
suspense.
It is. And then while Rhodes is absolutely knocked out and not able to play.
So Rhodes did not die.
No,
he's just out of it.
He's out of it. And then what happens is Sherlock Holmes goes to the last day of the test with young John Fairhurst, and he turns around and several people had commented that John Fairhurst looks so much like Rhodes, but what happened is that John Fairhurst had a beard and a moustache. So Sherlock Holmes shaved that off and made him look like, sent him out there. And remembering that John is an Australian and wanted Australia to win, he goes out there to bat in place of Rhodes and he nicks 1 for 4 and he gets another run. And then with the scores tight, he gets a winning run. And in fact, everything sort of told in the book about how that last partnership went, and the book stays true to that with Rhodes getting a single to win the game.
So I'm just looking at the last two pages, and it actually has the official score sheet from that test.
Yes.
And so they've used the exactly what happened in that test, but added their fictional characters.
I love it. I love the way they've done it.
And it all happened. So he went missing, and they only realized on the morning of the last day.
Yep.
And Sherlock Holmes worked all of that out.
Yep.
Before the game, before the day started.
Yep. Yep. I mean, even there was a media guy that was involved late in it and sort of said to Sherlock Holmes, you know, oh, there's something more to this. And he actually pulled the fake beard off of John Fairhurst after the game. But Sherlock Holmes had already expected it, and he sort of set everything up, so everything was fine at the end.
As Sherlock Holmes does.
Oh, yeah. Which
he just thinks everything through.
The thing I loved about it is it stayed true to the facts while fictionising it.
That is interesting, isn't it?
It is. It is. But I'll tell you a couple of things about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle as a cricketer. He only ever got one first-class wicket. First class, like in Australia, it's like South Australia, Victoria, or test matches and things like that. So he's only ever had one first class wicket, which he got on August 26, 1900, and you'd never guess who that wicket was.
You're about to tell me.
W.G. Grace, only the most famous cricketer exactly. of the time.
You know? Very famous.
And of course,
difficult to get out. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, there's a few rumours about he just would stand his ground when he was out anyhow. But, he was a very famous cricketer. He was the Don Bradman of the 19th century, you know, and whereas, you know, Don Bradman is recognised as the best batsman of all time. He was the best batsman of the 20th century. Well, W.G. Grace can claim the title for the 19th century. But I'll tell you, it was an interesting game. A couple of years later, in 1903, where the MCC played Kent, And Arthur Conan Doyle played in that game. Now, as you're probably aware, Arthur Conan Doyle was a doctor, and so was W.G. Grace. Anyway, they're playing as teammates. Obviously, Doyle can't bowl Grace on this occasion. So they're playing as teammates, and they're sort of in a bit of trouble in their second innings, and the last wicket's sort of in there, and Arthur Conan Doyle is batting. And he gets this ball coming inside, and he misses it, and it hits his pants. And he thinks it's a lot of pain. He reaches down, and he realises he's on fire. His pants were on fire.
How do you get on fire from getting hit by a cricket ball?
Well, let me tell you, and this is a true story. He had a tin of matches in his pocket.
So he probably had a pipe like Sherlock Holmes. Did he have a pipe after the innings?
More than likely. And it hit that, and he got on fire, but no one was.
So the balls hit his pocket.
Yes.
The matches are in a tin.
Yes.
And that contact has caused the matches to ignite.
The box broke open. The matches sort of like
wow
flicked open, but they were saying that they weren't too worried about it because they had two doctors there, both Doyle and Grace.
One of them's on fire.
But it's just a.
It reminds me of a story with, we're not allowed to use those starting caps anymore for different reasons, safety reasons. But back in the day, there was a story about never put those caps in your pockets because a PE teacher, they actually did go off in his pocket and imagine caused some severe burning in that area.
Well, I can tell you a similar story with firecrackers when I was a kid. And my brother John, he's 14 months younger than I, someone sort of threw a live cracker into his pocket. And he had this great big burn mark on his thigh. He's probably still got a scar there now.
It's nasty.
It is. No wonder
they do dumb stuff, don't they?
Well, they still do, but in different ways. But the book is, it's got me thinking. I've read the whole book and I just love the way they've done it. I would love to sort of come up with a historical story about the Olympics or baseball or whatever to set facts against fiction. I just think it's really a unique way of writing a book.
It is different, isn't it? And as you said, how did you come across this book? Because it's very interesting way of writing about cricket and, as you say, including Sherlock Holmes. So how did you come across it?
Well, my wife, Sue, and I were down at the Central Markets Friday week ago. So I've only had the book for like just over a week. And what happened is I always like to look at, there's a secondhand bookstore there. And there's a few things I like to look at. Obviously, one of them is sports. And And I've got a friend of mine, Peter Cornwall, who's works at the Advertiser. He's a mad keen Sherlock Holmes fan. I remember when I went to England one time, I went to the Sherlock Holmes Museum and bought him a puzzle book about Sherlock Holmes. And, you know, so I knew that. So I'm on the lookout. And I saw this Sherlock Holmes.
The first, you can clearly see Sherlock Holmes. That's the big writing on the front.
Yeah, at the 1902 fifth test. And when I saw the cover, as you can see, it's a magnificent cover. And it just took my attention. I just loved that sort of type of drawing. And I just thought the whole mix of Sherlock Holmes, test cricket, the fact that Joe Darling sort of played in that test.
Well, you've done a bit of work with Joe Darling, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done a few things. I know Bernard Wimpress wrote the autobiography about Darling, and I contributed a little bit to that. I gave him a photograph, which was taken at Mundurra about 1893. This is before Joe became a test cricketer, and he started up a football team, and he's standing in the middle of the photo holding this old football, and two people to his left looking at the photo is my great-grandfather, Bert Shearer, my mum's grandfather. And so that it's always been close to my heart. And
fascinating.
There's also a history book about cricket being written at the moment for Saka. And I was asked to write the chapter on Darling for that as well. And one of the interesting aspects that I discovered, and I interviewed Rick Darling. You remember Rick Darling?
Yes, of course, yeah.
And some people say they're not related, but they are. And his Rick's great-grandfather was Joe's father's brother. But the confusion came when Joe's father first came out from England. His brother went to America, so as a consequence of that, they never sort of realised, you know, the connection. But John or his sibling or his child came out to Australia, and actually down at in the river. But Rick tells a lovely story where he was growing up. There was this picture of Joe Darling batting on the mantelpiece, and he always looked up to that, and it inspired him to be a test cricketer himself, which I thought was lovely. So I went and interviewed Rick a number of years ago, and his son plays cricket for district cricket for Adelaide at the time. So I got a photo, I got some really good quotes, and that was part of the chapter that I wrote.
Well, that is fascinating, isn't it? So did Rick know that that was his, they were related?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he knew that, but you're saying other people questioned that.
Well, yeah, other people didn't bother doing the research, yeah. You know, and they just sort of said, oh, I've done the research and they're not related. I actually asked Rick and he gave me a family tree, explained it all to me, and I said to him, has anyone asked you? He says, no.
It's amazing, like a picture like that can be such a driving force.
Oh, look, it's incredible, but Rick's father himself played country state cricket, and he played on the Adelaide Oval when the Queen visited and was shaking hands with the Queen.
Wonderful.
And there's a photo of that too. So, yeah, so this book sort of did its job. It was an interesting story, well worth it. I recommend it. And it brought back so many other thoughts and so many other connections.
Yeah, so Sherlock Holmes at the 1902 Fifth Test.
By Stanley Shaw.
By Stanley Shaw.
Also ends another Cardon Lowe Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
Sean Carlin.